Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, the very president who scolded the Supreme Court in front of the entire nation, really, in a State of the Union message just a couple of years ago, was Sam Alito, got excoriated by the liberal media for mouthing the words not true when the president ripped the court for its Citizens United decision that eventually allowed for the creation of super PACs. The president outraged. And now, of course, he's creating super PACs and sending the high-ranking administration officials all over the country to help fund those super PACs. But, of course, there will be no coordination between his campaign and said super PACs. And this is, of course, no surprise, since it's a way to really crank up the money on both sides of the aisle. But, of course, the president, in his interview with Matt Lauer on Super Bowl Sunday, really wrestling with this morally about how, you know, I really don't like this, but what else am I going to do? I have to be able to keep up and respond to the negative attack machine from the right. This coming from a guy who's supposed to raise about $1 billion on his own. So, once again, a promise with an expiration date, Jim. And secondly, just as he's getting going, he has to announce that he's got to give back some money from a Mexican casino operator who's on the run for drug charges. So, overall, between hypocrisy and slinking a couple $100,000 back to some nefarious people, not a bad day for conservatives.
It's not. Two thoughts on this. The first is, look, the idea of Obama breaking a promise on this isn't the least bit surprising. We all remember how he was totally for taking public financing if the Republican candidate was willing to do it. And of course, Republicans would never agree to it. Well, lo and behold, John McCain wins the nomination and John McCain has no problem with taking public financing. And so all of a sudden, Obama, you know, he's actually caught on this promise. And so his, you know, probably the most definitive weaselly evasion was for him to declare that he's gotten so many donations from so many people that he had created what he called a parallel public financing system. Now, most people would call this private financing. You know, the whole point of public financing is it comes from taxpayers, by the way, which I think is a terrible idea. But if you're going to say, I will do this and I will take the spending limits that come with it, you can't just say, well, when I made that promise, it was convenient to me. And now it's not convenient to me, so I'm not going to keep that promise. And that is the Obama philosophy in a nutshell. You mentioned that, you know, super PACs are not allowed to coordinate with the candidate. What's kind of fascinating is this, you know, in the article you discussed, they talk about the cabinet officials, senior advisors of the White House, and top campaign staff members. So the super PAC can't coordinate with Obama, but it can coordinate with the cabinet members of the United States government.
Apparently.
I'm more worried about that last one. You know? I mean, I realize that, you know, cabinet officials have gotten dragged into campaign stuff for a long time, but it's a terrible trend. And I think that, look, if you're Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, Secretary of any of these jobs, you have a full-time job, okay? That job is serving the public. It is not to go out and go cheerleading for your boss. So, you know, I mean, this is an acceleration of a bad trend. The executive branch of government is becoming indistinguishable from the re-election campaign of the president, and this is a bad thing in a democracy. Finally, just that last point about the Mexicans who, you know, with drug ties, who are, you know, raised $200,000 for Obama and who are trying to get a pardon for their brother. It's the Mark Rich story all over again. The only good news you can say about this is that, to their credit, they're very courteous. They are remembering to tip their gun runner. You know, Obama and his administration send guns to the cartel south of the border. It's nice to say a little thank you to the president for all the services he and ATF have done. So well done for that. Taxpayers lose, American people lose. But other than that, it's great news. So
on to the bad martini now. And speaking of super PACs, Jim, I'm not sure Chrysler qualifies officially for the Federal Election Commission as a super PAC for the president. But in a lot of minds of conservatives around the country, it might as well, following this ad featuring Clint Eastwood that ran during the Super Bowl.
People are out of work and they're hurting. And they're all wondering what they're going to do to make a comeback. And we're all scared because this isn't the game. The people of Detroit know a little something about this. They almost lost everything. But we all pulled together. Now Motor City is fighting again. This country can't be knocked out with one punch. We get right back up again, and when we do, the world's gonna hear the roar of our engines. Yeah, it's halftime, America. And our second half's about to begin.
And so, given the fact that Chrysler is, first of all, owned a majority stake by a non-American company, makes that very nationalistic tone a little bit hollow. And, of course, he's echoing the main economic stump speech of the president with the auto industry. That was certainly the president's hallmark in the State of the Union address, and he really has nothing else to talk about economically. That's good. So a lot of conservatives were suggesting that Clint Eastwood was basically used as a pawn by the administration in this ad, since the government is still technically in charge of Chrysler. And here's Bill O'Reilly reading the written statement from Clint Eastwood on his show yesterday.
I just want to say that the spin stops with you guys. There's no spin in that ad. On that, I'm certain. I am certainly not politically affiliated with Mr. Obama. It was meant to be a message just about job growth and the spirit of America. I think all politicians will agree with it. I thought the spirit was okay. I'm not supporting any politician. Chrysler, to their credit, didn't even have cars in the ad. Anything they gave me went to charity. And if Obama or any other politician wants to run with the spirit of the ad, I say go for it, unquote, Clint Eastwood.
I know you've had a lot of thoughts on this, but I know a lot of people consider having their taxpayers' dollars used to essentially push the largest economic point of the president's reelection message as a little bit unsettling, to say the least.
Worth noting, one, that this ad firm that set up this ad has worked with Obama campaign and Democrats in the past. In this sense, it's a masterwork, because I don't doubt that Clint Eastwood is telling the truth when he says he didn't see anything political in it. It's sufficiently generic enough that there's nothing overtly political in it. Although when he talks about the dissent and, you know, problems and disputes, it's kind of intriguing because they show footage apparently of the protests outside the state capitol in Wisconsin. Now, as we all know, that was one in which there was all kinds of people disrupting the halls and you know, defacing the state capitol and breaking in and doing all kinds of terrible stuff. And there just seems to be this, oh, isn't it terrible we're disagreeing with each other? Well, you know, that seems like a very morally hands-off look at that issue. I mean, you know, elected state lawmakers, you know, enacted a policy they wanted to enact. They will face, you know, consequences at the ballot box. But instead, you know, basically folks who are acting like an angry mob did everything they could to disrupt the operation of the state government. The whole message of the ad is, well, we're seeing dissent and we're at each, you know, we're disagreeing with each other, but we will unify. Well, that's great, but we have this dissent for a reason. We have very, very different ideas about how we should do this. And this whole ad kind of glides past it. And it's kind of a little galling to see a car company. Look, you know, the idea that Clint Eastwood is citing Detroit as a role model in this. Yeah, Detroit is winning again, or Detroit is doing okay. You know why? Because they got billions of dollars from taxpayers. All of us could thrive if we had that kind of deal. I'm glad that these companies are in better shape. I think it's, you know, rather galling that the other ad that got so much attention took a shot at Ford, the only company that didn't take government bailout dollars. I mean, it's very tough to believe that, thinking well enough of Clint Eastwood, I don't think he's lying to us. I think he may be lying to himself. He may, you know, be fooling himself. But even though he thinks it is just a, come on, America, let's all unify and get through this and we'll be okay message. Look, first of all, the reference of halftime on the eve of a re-election bid for the presidency, you know, if you can't pick up that subtext, I'm kind of baffled by that. And then secondly, the idea of a company that got a ton of money from taxpayers saying we're doing okay, well, then fine. How about pay back some of that money you owe? Okay. How about, you know, at this point, if the U.S. sell its shares in GM, we'd lose something in the neighborhood of like $13.4 billion in addition to the money that's already gone. There was a whole bunch about the Chrysler cars and other ad. You know, will they survive the apocalypse? They can't even survive the United Auto Workers. Just kind of mind-boggling to see not one but two very expensive ads run basically saying hooray for taxpayer bailouts, because in the end it's our money being used to advertise back to us how good it is that our money has been involuntarily taken for this. Remember that all the money that went to GM came out of TARP, and when TARP was passed, nothing in that debate dealt with bailing out car companies, etc. It is baffling. It is frustrating. It is, you know, makes you grind your teeth. The only thing that I can say in this, Greg, that will kind of cheer everyone up or maybe leave us with a smile is the recognition that absolutely anything sounds really good if it's read by Clint Eastwood.
Well, that's certainly true.
And I'll just demonstrate this by looking at today's Washington Post sports page. Heading into today's showdown at Verizon Center, Florida holds a one-point edge in the standings, 59-58. In the Southeast lead, while the Capitals reside in ninth, out of the Eastern playoff picture. See, doesn't that sound dramatic and gripping? And, you know, yeah, I need to be a little breathier when I do that.
On to the crazy martini now. And speaking of a relatively old person who we don't have as much respect for, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg was in Egypt last week. Apparently, she's one of the few Americans allowed to leave. But anyway, in a television interview, she seemed to have, let's just say, not the highest personal regard for the Constitution, you know, the document that she and every other federal employee has sworn to do everything possible to defend. Yeah, she has said, I would not look to the United States Constitution if I were drafting a constitution in the year 2012, she said. She recommended instead the South African Constitution, the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, or the European Convention on Human Rights. Jim, I remember Justice Kennedy got hammered a few years ago, and rightly so, for injecting international law into a Supreme Court decision. Apparently, that's the basis for most of what Ruth Bader Ginsburg would like to see done. Apparently, the Constitution is just kind of an annoying little hurdle for her.
It's galling and frustrating and a little surprising. I mean, we on the right have always kind of rolled our eyes and believed that the left is you know, opposed to the U.S. Constitution. I remember a former colleague of mine dismissing it as a tired old document that was irrelevant to the issues of today. But it's kind of frightening to hear this from a Supreme Court justice whose whole job is to determine, you know, when a law is passed, does it violate the Constitution or not? And you can just hear, you know, she just is weary of having to deal with the U.S. Constitution. I think what it is that, you know, we snicker about liberals wanting to immunize the eschaton. Look, the Constitution is an impediment to creating utopia. You know, that we've heard Obama complain about the way the government works, complaining that he doesn't have all the authority he wants, complaining that Congress can stymie his efforts. Checks and balances are very irritating to liberals these days. I think they really believe they are on the verge of doing everything they want. And this thing in the National Archives keeps telling them they can't, and it bugs them. It's a revealing comment. It's a very frustrating comment. I think what's kind of – there are two fascinating things about it. The first is that she thought it, which is disturbing enough. The fact that she said it, which is bad enough. The fact that she said it on foreign soil. And the fact that she said it, it's now been reported. And I don't think beyond you and I there's going to be an enormous, you know, amount of outcry about this. We just kind of accept the fact that a good chunk of our Supreme Court justices find the Constitution to be a rather tired annoyance that just gets in the way of you know, creating the laws they want to create.
That does not bode well for a lot of decisions coming up, including Obamacare. But then again, I don't think we ever expected her to actually be on the right side of any of the decisions coming up. And now we know why. Thanks a lot, Bill Clinton. And thanks, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, for reminding us of what the founders, I'm sure, did not want on the Supreme Court. But unfortunately, we have anyway. Jim, on that
Happy Tuesday, everybody.
Sorry to be depressing so much the first couple days this week. We'll try to get better. Jim, have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Wednesday for the next and hopefully cheerier 3 Martini Lunch.